Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear stories from Brian Lynn, Katie Weaver, John Russell, Olivia Leo, and Mario Ritter. Later, Alice Bryant will bring us this week's education report. But first, here is Brian Lynn.
The European Commission, or EC, has fined Google $2.7 billion for unfairly influencing online search results for its own businesses. It was the largest fine ever ordered by the EC against a single company in an antitrust case. Antitrust laws are designed to protect trade from unlawful restrictions and unfair business activities. European Union, or EU, investigators said that in online searches with Google, the company listed links to its own online shopping services above those of competitors. What Google has done is illegal under EU antitrust rules, said European Competition Commissioner Margrethe Vestager. It denied other companies the chance to compete on the merits and to innovate, she added. Google, which operates under parent company Alphabet, denied any wrongdoing. We respectfully disagree with the conclusions announced today, Chief Lawyer Kent Walker said in a statement. Google said research shows users of its website like when they link directly to products they are looking for. When you shop online, you want to find the products you are looking for quickly and easily, Walker said. And advertisers want to promote those same products. That is why Google shows shopping ads, connecting our users with thousands of advertisers, large and small, in ways that are useful for both. The EC investigation lasted about 7 years. It was launched after consumer websites accused Google of unfair business practices. In addition to the fine, the company is required to develop a plan to give competing shopping services equal treatment. Google has 90 days to stop suggesting its own links over those of competitors. If it does not make changes, it faces fines of up to 5% of Alphabet's average daily worldwide earnings. The EU consumer group, Buch, praised the fine. This decision is a game changer, said Director General Monique Goins. The Commission confirmed that consumers do not see what is most relevant for them on the world's most used search engine, but rather what is best for Google. In the past, the U.S. Federal Trade Commission investigated Google for possible antitrust practices. Part of that case also involved accusations that the company used its search engine to support its other businesses. The company ended up reaching a settlement with the FTC in 2013. I'm Brian Lynn.
The United States Supreme Court has rejected another call to decide whether Americans have a legal right to carry guns outside their homes. The High Court released rulings on a number of cases Monday. But it refused to hear a case against a California law that sets limits on carrying guns in public. The High Court left in place an appeals court ruling in the case. The appeals court confirmed the legality of a measure to limit permits for concealed weapons, those placed out of sight. The Supreme Court ruled in 2008 that the United States Constitution guarantees the right to carry a gun, at least for self-defense at home. But the court has refused repeated requests to expand on its understanding of gun rights. More than 40 states already have rules giving gun owners a right to be armed in public. A new study shows that Americans are as deeply divided about gun policy as they are about immigration, health care, and other issues. The Pew Research Center questioned 3,900 people nationwide. The resulting study found sharp differences of opinion between gun owners and those who do not own guns. The study found that more than half of owners support creation of a federal database for recording gun sales. 80% of those who do not own guns also support such an effort. About half of gun owners support a ban on assault weapons, compared to almost 80% of non-gun owners. Assault weapons have been compared to guns used in armed conflicts. Gun control activists say such weapons are meant to kill multiple people quickly and not for civilian use. Yet there was common ground among gun owners and non-gun owners on other issues. Nearly 90% of all those questioned believe the government should bar the mentally sick from purchasing guns. Also, about 80% of those who own guns believe people named on federal no-fly or watch lists should be prevented from buying guns. Strong majorities of both groups support background investigations of those who buy guns from an individual or at gun shows. The study also found that at least 2/3 of Americans have lived in a home with a gun. About half of those questioned who have never owned a gun said they had fired one. About 1,300 of the 3,900 people questioned said they own guns. The rest said they did not. Most of the gun owners described themselves as white males who are members of the Republican Party. The study found that people who live in the northeastern United States are less likely to own a gun than are people in other parts of the country. I'm Katie Weaver.
Brazil's president, Michel Temer, calls the corruption charges against him a soap opera and accuses the country's top lawyer of seeking revenge. On Monday, Attorney General Rodrigo Janot charged Temer with accepting at least $150,000 in payments. The payments are said to have come from the head of Brazil's huge meat-producing company, JBS, earlier this year. Temer took office last year after former President Dilma Rousseff was removed from office for breaking laws related to reporting the nation's budget. Reports say there is an audio recording of Temer reportedly plotting to pay money to a former House Speaker and a Temer associate who was jailed for corruption. And Janot is considering other charges against Temer, including obstruction of justice. After the Attorney General's charges, a complex process involving the nation's highest court and Congress could lead to a vote by the full lower house. The lower house of Brazil's Congress, called the Chamber of Deputies, could decide whether to suspend Temer or try him on charges of bribery. Two-thirds of the 513-member group must agree to do so. If Temer is found guilty, he faces a $3 million fine and 2 to 12 years in prison. But observers think Congress will not force him out. Sonia Fleury is a political science professor at the Fundação Getúlio Vargas University in Rio de Janeiro. She says several senators and deputies are in the same boat as he is, being accused in the same way. Fleury adds they are protecting each other to avoid prosecution. Brazil's president has denied the charges and says that he will not step down. Public opinion studies show Temer has a very low rate of approval of 7%. South America's largest economy is recovering from a deep recession. Unemployment and inflation remain high, while economic growth has not been strong. The government has proposed unpopular reforms to the country's finances, including cutting payments to retired workers and labor reforms. Peter Hackim is the former president of the Inter-American Dialogue, a research group based in Washington. He says the charges against Temer make it difficult for lawmakers to vote on financial reforms and cuts to public spending.
There may have been enough votes for him to secure the economic reforms necessary, but now people have to vote for unpopular reforms and for unpopular defense of Temer.
I'm Mario Ritter.
The Congressional Budget Office says the number of uninsured people in the United States would rise to 22 million within the next 10 years under the Senate health care bill. The Senate's bill would replace the Affordable Care Act, a law that former President Barack Obama supported. The Affordable Care Act is often called Obamacare. Republicans have spent about 7 years attempting to cancel Obamacare. The CBO said in a study released Monday that the Senate bill would decrease the federal budget deficit by $321 billion by 2026.
This is the second health care bill to be considered in Congress. Both the House and the Senate have different health care bills. In order for a bill to become law, it needs to pass both the House and the Senate and be signed by the President. Senate leaders plan to vote after the July 4th holiday on their version of the bill. Currently, Americans are required to buy health insurance or pay a fine if they do not. The Senate's bill would end that requirement. In addition, the bill would end subsidies meant to help lower-income people buy insurance. It would also decrease some taxes on higher-income people. And it would cut billions of dollars of government funding for the health care program for poor and disabled people over the next few years.
To pass a bill in the Senate, a majority of senators must vote for the bill. If there is a tie, the vice president can vote to break the tie. Currently, Republicans hold 52 of the 100 seats in the Senate. All 46 Senate Democrats are expected to vote against the bill. In order for the bill to pass, Republicans can risk losing only two of their senators. A group of Republican senators has already said they will not vote for the bill in its current form. When Obamacare became law in 2010, it passed without any Republican votes. Since the 2016 elections, Republicans gained control of the presidency, the House, and the Senate. A change to Obamacare could be possible now.
About 20 million people have received insurance with Obamacare. Many of those people are covered under the government's Medicaid program for the poor and disabled. The two bills to change Obamacare propose to cut about $800 billion in federal funds for Medicaid over the next few years. President Donald Trump had stated during his campaign for office that he would not cut Medicaid funding. Senate Democratic leader Chuck Schumer told ABC that he hopes that Republicans will talk with Democrats and work together on a solution to make Obamacare better. I'm Mario Ritter.
And I'm Olivia Liu.
Akinwumi Adesina, president of the African Development Bank, has won the 2017 World Food Prize. The award is often called the Nobel Prize for Food and Agriculture. Adesina has worked for many years to increase food production in Nigeria. He has increased access to credit for small farmers and influenced agricultural policies throughout Africa. I believe that what Africa does with agriculture and how it does it is not only important for Africa, but it's important for how we're going to feed the world by 2050, because 65% of all the uncultivated arable land left in the world is in Africa, Adesina said. To help Africa get it right in agriculture is also going to be a key part of securing food for the world. World Food Prize President Kenneth Quinn said those goals are one reason the World Food Prize Federation chose Akinwumi Adesina for the $250,000 prize. When I look at Africa today, I see that many rural areas, unfortunately, have become zones of economic misery, Adesina told the Reuters news agency. The African Development Bank chief is the son of a Nigerian farm worker. He worked his way out of poverty through education. He was able to go to college after his father was chosen for a government job. The young man continued his studies in the United States. He earned graduate degrees in agricultural economics from Purdue University. Adesina said agriculture has the greatest chance to improve lives in areas that are suffering. But he said investments are needed to make young people want to become farmers. He noted that many young people risk their lives by leaving Africa for Europe in search of work. We must make agriculture cool for young people, he said. The key is to make agriculture a business. Agriculture is not a way of life. It is not a development activity. It's a business. Adesina said he often thinks of the hundreds of millions of young, rural Africans whose chances for economic success are limited. So in a way for me, this is not a job. This is a mission, he said. I'm John Russell.
What is your first memory of riding a bicycle? Was it easy, difficult, or somewhere in between? In the beginning, you may have wondered if you would ever be able to ride a bicycle at all. Then suddenly, one day, you could ride without help from anyone. Doing a physical activity easily without thinking uses an ability we call muscle memory. When you repeat a physical action many times, your brain develops permanent memory for how to do it. There are many examples, such as walking, swimming, dancing, driving a car, playing a musical instrument, and speaking your native language. Elizabeth Marner Brooks says your muscles can help you remember how to pronounce words. For nearly 30 years, she has taught English language classes at the New School and other universities in New York City. Pronunciation is one of her areas of expertise. At the start of her pronunciation courses, Marner Brooks asks her students how often they practice their pronunciation skills. The usual answer is once or twice a week. Then she asks how long they think it would take a baby to learn to walk if they only tried that often. She hopes this discussion helps them see the connection between speaking and the memory we build into our muscles. Marner Brooks recently spoke to VOA Learning English on Skype.
It's using the muscles. You have to give yourself permission because human nature dictates that we're going to be spurred on to doing things once we find results. But we get the results by doing it. and you can get results very quickly, if you just do it.
Right now, the muscles in your mouth, lips, and tongue may feel strange as they try to make the shapes to produce the sounds of English words. This can require a lot of effort. But Marner Brooks notes that the muscles will soon remember how to produce the correct sounds with little or no effort. She works with her students to make consonant and vowel sounds. She also teaches them the use of stress and pitch, two other important elements of English pronunciation. Many English learners have told Marner Brooks that other teachers only ask them to repeat English words. They did not teach how to produce the sounds.
One person said, well, nobody ever showed me that my tongue goes up for a D and presses. Nobody ever showed me that. They would just do it, and I had to copy it.
Unlike many languages, English has 16 different vowel sounds. So building memory for the correct tongue position is especially important, she notes. For vowels, she explains that the sounds have a natural progression from the highest position of the tongue to the flattest position. So, for example, for a long E sound, the tongue is high up in the mouth, like a camel's back, she says. For a shorter vowel sound, the tongue is in the middle of the mouth, and for the shortest, the tongue is flat. Try the sounds that Marner Brooks pronounces to feel it for yourself.
So, he, as in he, she, we, and he, as in him, women, and he, as in help, bread, head.
She adds that speaking is a creative action. We are creating sounds as we speak. A common misunderstanding people have about learning language is that it is only an intellectual action.
And when we're dealing with speech, with making the sounds, we're dealing with the creative side of the brain, not the intelligent thinking side.
To help build your muscle memory, Marner Brooks says you can use pronunciation videos on the internet. She suggests English learners avoid using the internet to simply repeat words they hear. Instead, find short American English pronunciation guides on websites like YouTube. Specifically, look for videos that demonstrate things like vowel and consonant muscle training. Marner Brooks suggests students do vowel and consonant pronunciation exercises for 3 to 5 minutes 4 times each day. And use a mirror to observe yourself as you practice the sounds. If these exercises feel foolish or strange, she has these final thoughts.
What I suggest is for you to be comfortable, take the risks, and enjoy speaking the language. That's the goal.
I'm Alice Bryant.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.